You are listening to Unleash Your Magic with Goddess Arian Moore.
Welcome to the show tonight. This is Goddess Arian Moore, and this is Unleash Your Magnificence. And my guest tonight is Dr. Lori Moore. Dr. Lori Moore offers counseling sessions for people and animal communication sessions as well. She's available in person, by phone, by email, and Skype. Her television show, Universal Love and Animal Communication, is played on a variety of television stations in the United States. You may have also seen, read, or heard her on In the Company of Angels, Fox News, CNN, Seeing Beyond, or numerous other television and radio shows. She is the author of Creative Intimacy and Anna Miracles. When you're ready to change your life but not sure how, call Dr. Lori Moore. She has successfully helped hundreds of people. When you wish to know what your animal wishes to say to you, call Dr. Lori Moore. She is an expert animal communicator, known for her co-teaching with Penelope Smith. Dr. Lori Moore can be reached at www.animiracles.com, and join me in bringing Dr. Lori Moore on to the air. Hello, Dr. Lori Moore. How you doing tonight?
Good. So nice to be back on. Yeah.
Oh, it's so nice to have you. Thank you.
So I was just thinking about the five stages of grieving, because so many people called recently with potential animals in crisis, maybe going to die. And I wanted to say I really thank Kubler-Ross for her beautiful work of raising consciousness on the planet so that people could become more aware of those five stages. And I also wanted to add in that actually when people are grieving, they're also, if they notice, experiencing states of unconditional joy, bliss, peace, all of that is part of what's offered in grieving. Grace brings that during grieving. And I wanted to point that out because so many people call me about the experiences they're having when they have to decide if an animal wants to be put to sleep and or their animal's passed. And it's people really go through quite a lot of sorrow when they lose an animal. And I wanted to ask people to embrace that and to also notice that they're going through other kinds of feelings too, which are very acceptable and part of the whole grace of birth and death that happens.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. It's funny because we had talked about maybe doing a topic on what is authority, but the aspect of what you go through when your pet dies, and even making the decision to do something with your pet, if your pet's at that point, no one wants to make the decision. It feels so wrong to make that decision, if that makes sense. It's like if it was time.
Yes, and this actually ties in completely with what is authority, because we are very trained to think that someone else might know what's right or that we're going to experience life in a certain way. That really isn't how we're experiencing life, or because everyone is unique in some ways and the same as everyone else in others. And so when the decision comes about, is it time to help put an animal to sleep, it's very natural for people to turn to their vet or their animal communicator and ask, what should I do? And that's very understandable. And I recommend I have two answers to that. One is, I find time and again, people really are, when they're listening carefully, picking up on what the animal's will is. But it's always good to confirm with an animal communicator who is very used to communicating and conversing with animals. And every situation is different and unique. And I believe in respecting an animal's will. So I always ask an animal, what is it that's happening? What is it that you're experiencing? What is it that you're desiring? And each situation is different. But what's commonly true is the animal is very, very aware about what the people are going through. And the animal has some kind of plan of assistance so that before leaving, they will help the person to go through a certain transition that the person needs to go through because of the animal's departure. And sometimes animals will tell me, I will be in my person's arms, I will be leaving, and a person later verifies it. Other times the animal is not quite sure of the timing, but knows that, you know, it is destiny. I was working with a dog the last week or so who said, the person called me before, and the dog made it very clear that regardless of what that dog was going through physically, because the dog did go through cancer, it was not time. And then I got a call, and the dog said, it's absolutely my time to go. You know, it might be in a couple of days or a week. I don't know exactly. The dog went in and out of some high energy states and some very low energy states like people do when they're coming towards the end. But the dog clearly understood the dog was being called upon to enter the other universe beyond the body. They know. And sometimes they do ask for help. They do ask for help in the very end, and sometimes they don't. And sometimes people don't know they don't, and they make an appointment. And very commonly vets will say, oh, well, I've had lots of cases where someone called to make an appointment, so the animal just left the body a few hours before or the night before. But basically, when people call me, because I get lots of calls on this topic, is it time for my animal to go? I ask the animal. The animal knows. The animal knows how they want to go. The animal knows somewhat of the time frame, not exactly. And the animal knows what the person needs to go through with the animal. And the animal knows if the animal wants veterinary assistance to leave or if the animal will be leaving on their own. So respecting the animal's will is always my priority in these kind of natural situations, because everyone dies, and so it's just part of life. And I want to invite people to fully feel into everything that's moving through them, because we get scripts. It's like, okay, well, this is what I'm supposed to feel. When I grieve, I'll have 5 stages of grieving. Well, you will. It's true. She was amazing, Kubler-Ross, very astute, but you will also feel many other divine qualities It's an incredible time. Transition time is a time where we're graced with incredible peace and bliss and joy, moving, interweaving with the other feelings of separation and sorrow. It's a poignant time where all the feelings about separation and union, that is the whole purpose of our incarnation, to come back into our memory of the union we're always in, all those feelings get magnified during when we know someone transitioning and when we're transitioning. And so I invite people to fully feel into whatever is moving through consciousness, through them, during those times. And that will bring your animal great peace, because your animal really wants you to come home out of the management and out of the reaction into the full experience of being alive.
Oh, that is so well put. And it's true, I have had the experience where you make the decision that you're going to take. I mean, I'm one, when I make the decision, it doesn't matter what time of day or night. There are other people who will make the decision, say, first thing in the morning. To me, at the point where I think it's time, I'm not going to waste any time. You know what I mean? It's kind of like if I had made the decision I wanted to go, I wouldn't want it to be held off any longer. But I know that the moment I've made the decision, I know of pets that have gone almost immediately at night. And it's almost as if they prepared their owners to make that decision, that the owners finally made the decision. So there was that sense of peace that the animal confirmed the decision they made, that yes, you were right in the decision you made.
I think that you're so sensitive and connected to your animals that when you made the decision, it was because they made the decision. It was because really, in a way, the universe made the decision, and you both heard it, and you were both right in harmony with each other.
I think you're right on that. The other thing I've noticed, there's been a lot of footage, if you watch on YouTube, with wild animals who, like, you know, the elks or whatever, they are crossing the, you know, a river with crocodiles, and a crocodile gets a hold of one of the babies or something, and you can actually see the animal spirit leaving the body per se, because the alligator's got it. And it just, like, just drops, and it's dead.
Yeah.
But
it
then
the alligator. Go ahead.
Yeah. Then the alligator kind of, you know, lets loose for a second, figuring that it's got its prey, and all of a sudden the animal, like, zips back in the body, and it's like takes off again, and the fight starts. And it's different than what we see with our pets. If you know what I'm trying to get across there.
Well, you're very, very observant to see that, how an animal's soul can actually leave the body and then come back in. And it will happen sometimes towards the end. Like I was talking to Kat today, to this morning, the cat's in the body, completely fine in the body. Then I check back with the cat 6 hours later, and the cat's not in the body. But I had to double check because I didn't feel the cat had fully transitioned. And what I felt was happening was the cat, yes, the cat's going in and out of the body as the getting ready to transition. And we do see this in people too. When a human friend recently died who was in elder years, he was sometimes totally alert for hours, and then people were like, he's not even here. He's gone. Where is he? And then he'd come back in. So it does happen that souls will leave the body and then come back in and leave and come back in when there's an ending or when there's a potential ending that might not actually occur.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. I think animals, whereas we tend to cling on in a different way than animals do, that they're free to release in a different way than we are.
We're invited, and I really invite people at this time in history where it's so much easier to just release now. It's not releasing out of your body. It's releasing into whatever is the truth of destiny, whatever is really happening. The New Age really gets people pumped up on trying to really manage and willfully orchestrate what they want to happen because of their ego. And ego's not wrong or bad. It's just ultimately a joke. It's ultimately not fulfilling. I'm not saying don't take responsibility for your creations. We need to do that. But there's a point in every life, maybe not in every incarnation, I would say in every soul stream's existence, at some point when people realize that if we start to surrender deeply into just what is occurring, all that we ever needed is here, we find ourselves in endless givingness, which is receivingness. And the animals know this. They live this. They're not looking. Nothing's missing. They're not looking for anything. They're devoted to what their job is, their soul job. We each have a soul job it's to emanate what we are. What we're, most people are looking for is what they are. The most times when I meet a person who comes into my office in distress looking for something on the outside, and I'm not saying we shouldn't look on the outside. We need to gather food. We need to find food to eat it. We need to build shelter. We have dreams that we should for sure actualize and work on. I'm all for it. I do all of that, of course. And there's also something more profoundly fulfilling that the animals know about, which is when we step into what our soul purpose is, what our soul is really emanating, everything we were looking for outside is what we are. If we're looking for love, we will find out we are love. If we're looking for giving, we will find out that we're a vehicle through which giving comes and goes. So the animals live in this, so they don't have to cling, and we don't have to cling. So I'm not inviting people to make themselves wrong or stop clinging. I'm inviting people to step in to the sensation of clinging when clinging begins to occur and find out what that is, where that takes you, what the source of that wave of momentum is. And that's a deep, deep reservoir of peace. It's very abstract when spoken about until one steps into it again and again and again, and it becomes so real, as you experience in one of our first radio shows and have talked about a lot.
Oh, it's very profound when you go into that place. But I like what you mentioned, the fact that we are what we're searching for externally.
Yes, we are. It's so funny. We are. It's so funny that, you know, it's kind of like a cat chasing his own tail, except the cat knows that it's playful and it's funny. But a lot of us are chasing our own tails around. And if we stop for a moment and really breathe into and fall into what is in there, in the heart, it's there. What we're looking for is complete. It's whole. It's birthing outward. It's generating life in all around us. So we don't have to keep chasing anything.
But we still do. That's the thing. The number of people who call into the various shows on, you know, on Blog Talk and elsewhere, and it's, you know, when will love come to me, or when will I find? And it's like, how do we get them? How do we get someone to get the point that they're worthy of love, the love that they are, that they are love?
It's a lifelong process, because we all have those conditionings. And even though for every moment in the day when I feel just the generation of love and fulfillment, I also will find another moment in the day where my mind's totally mixed up and it's asking for things it thinks it needs that it may really doesn't need at all. And it's, you know, trying to manage situations so situations will feel comfortable. Our mind will do it till the day we die, no matter how much we've fallen into the oneness, the serenity, the fulfillment. Our minds are, I don't know who created the mind, but it was created that way. You know, the universe created the mind in the human that way. And so what we do for one another is we invite each other lovingly back in by inviting each other to practice gratitude and inviting each other to be so present in the currents of what's happening that we just naturally fall back into the love. And we invite ourselves, because our minds will do all kinds of other things.
My mind gets off on tangents someplace, I tell you, and it's like I lost the point somewhere, you know? It's like, what we're talking about, love? Nah, not today.
Well, you
not
know,
feeling
I mean,
it.
I love the New Age, and I'm part of the New Age and everything, bless it, but I have to say I run into so many people who are searching for abundance, and I really often just want to invite them to go into service, because a lot of the people that come to me in lack of abundance, they have no idea how abundant they are compared to most of the planet. They're wealthy. They have everything they could ever need, and in the physical realm, and they're thinking that they're missing something in the physical realm. That not only are they not missing anything, they've just been showered for life. And what's missing is that they're not in service. And when you go into service, you're in love and you're fulfilled and you're happy. You can't be in service and be unhappy. You can be in fake service where your mind's like, you have to go into service, but that's not service. And sometimes service is just sitting and doing nothing or writing a poem. It's not like you have to be a nurse or you have to feed the poor to be in service. If that's your calling, that's a beautiful service. But for some people, being in service is going swimming in the ocean and just being the joy. I mean, service is just giving your heart back to the love in the way that's natural for you. And when you are, are, you'll notice everything you need is here, really. It's easy for me to say I live in the United States. I know that. I've been given an easy life in that respect. Of course, I've had all my many struggles like everyone else. But I just do invite people, no matter what the struggle is, at what level, whether it's physical, mental, emotional. And I know there's people on the planet in horrendous circumstances. But I see a lot of people who aren't in horrendous circumstances, and nevertheless, they're in suffering. And that's not invalid. It's fine. It's beautiful. It's the heart calling itself home. And so I invite people to go into gratitude, to go into presence, and to go into service. And notice that everything you ever yearned for is emanating out of you. And I'm not inviting anyone to make yourself wrong because you're not doing that. We just have to remind each other all the time because we all forget.
When I was doing some of my training through like one of the mystery schools I was going through at one point back, we didn't understand, but we were actually sent to feed the homeless, to make sandwiches, to put together food that we could prepare and make, and we were sent out on the street into like the worst part of town, walking around the streets. And it was like minus 20 degrees for 20 hours, finding people, giving food. And that's, it's true. You got to see a whole different side of humanity when you're in that position. And there's an appreciation of those people who do live on the street that we don't seem to have, or the majority of us don't seem to have in our day-to-day lives, for those of us that have homes and have jobs.
Thank you for reminding me that the reason people don't understand the extent to which they've been blessed and graced is because they haven't been given an experience of something different. They haven't been plopped into a situation like you were so fortunate to experience, where it's 20 degrees and or 20 hours and it's cold. I didn't get all the facts right, but you're out there feeding people
yes.
who live in those conditions and don't have. And then you start to realize how many blessings you have. So, you know, it's a great opportunity when you're blessed to do something like that and really see the contrast, and when you're able to travel and visit other conditions and talk to people in other conditions and experience the other conditions and find out how much fortune is with us. But so many people who have that have come to see me who have great fortune in the physical realms, their struggles are valid, and there, I don't want to, what I said before, to invalidate the emotional struggles or the mental struggles or the spiritual struggles that people are going through when they're feeling really hurt or sad. Those are really real, and those really require love and stepping back into presence and service and gratitude to find one's way into the gem that is offered in a broken heart or an aching heart or a person feeling devastated by a loss. Those are very, very real, deep experiences, sometimes even more brutally hard to take than physical challenges. And so I invite people to do these three practices of going into gratitude or stepping so fully into the aching heart or whatever it is, the lack you're feeling, that you find in its sensation is something else, or to go into genuine service, not forced service, but some way of giving what you are that others may benefit. It might even just be being present. It might be reaching out to someone, but it might be writing a poem, or it might just be going into the forest and talking to an owl. But whatever it is, I'm just reminding people that love and fulfillment is here always, and any of those three practices will just take you right back to it. It just does. It's so simple.
What you're saying is so, so true. I remember done many things, but I remember having to spend overnight in the Great Canadian Wilderness, which was really scary at night, because
yeah.
there are animals that go bump in the night that you really don't want to run into.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, the animals watch over you.
Ah.
You have this fear of what's going on around you, but the animals are actually watching over you. You can feel their presence around
wow.
you.
That's beautiful. You've had really, really amazing. You're so tuned in and sensitive and have gotten yourself into these very incredible experiences.
Oh, yeah, I've had some really wonderful experiences. But that's also where you also meet your, like, the vision quests and that Native Indian and a lot of the indigenous cultures do, is that's where you got your animal totems and your spirit guides came to you when you were out in the dark, kind of like your dark night of the soul, you know, a shamanic death or whatever. It's no different than when someone goes into a deep depression, you know, when their world's falling apart. It's similar. It's just, I think it's harder for us to cope because we don't get a chance to see that experience in modern day life when you have everything. That makes sense?
Yes, that makes sense. Thank you.
Whereas for cultures that are used to being outside and living off the land and experiencing, like, where they know that spirit's providing for them, they don't have that same type dark night of the soul.
Yes. There's a whole different kind of thinking and conditioning that comes in modern life. Yes. Well put.
And we had, it was actually a conversation that I got into at work today about people who suffer from things like schizophrenia. Schizophrenia in particular, because of course part of that is that they hear voices.
Yes.
And I am a firm believer within myself that they are just so tapped in, tuned in to what's going on around them.
What happens with people who have schizophrenia is the doors, or in my experience when I worked with people who had schizophrenia, the doors were all open. So they could hear the angels, they could hear the evildoers, they could hear all the disembodied beings. And some are very evil, and some are very high benevolent beings. And so the challenge with having schizophrenia is many of us hear the angels and those beings and learn, because we have that openness, not to listen to the dark doers. We will not engage with them. But, or some of us just open to all of it so deeply that we stay in a love and light through all the voices. The wounded one who's a dark doer, and embodied or not embodied. And so any of those approaches can happen, but what's so challenging for someone who's experiencing schizophrenia is that they have trouble differentiating two things, in my experience. One is who to listen to when you're hearing all this input from a lot of different voices, and two, who they are. Who are they in that experience? So sometimes someone with schizophrenia will think that they're God. Well, sure, everyone's God on a certain way, but there's an emanating source of mystery through which each vehicle, each being is used. That's God. And in its separation, a vehicle that doesn't have the humility to realize, in its separation, there's a difference between what it is as a individual in duality and the source creation. Then there's a lot of trouble, and then someone with schizophrenia can get very mixed up.
Yeah. But I'd say for me, it's the gift is just so wide open and that they can't distinguish. You worded it much better than I was going to word it.
You word everything wonderfully. You had really profound experiences. Yeah. We just talk as equals and share back and forth and articulate. Your articulation is just as well done as mine.
Oh, thank you.
And plus, some people have no idea what I'm talking about. I've had people approach me in public and say, I have no idea what you just said. But, you know, other people are quite happy about it, so I just do my best.
Well, the message comes in different ways and different sources from different places and the way best needed by everyone, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny because a friend of mine, her brother has schizophrenia, and he is the nicest guy you could ever want to know. Mm. But he is extremely hard on himself when he thinks or perceives he's done something wrong.
Oh.
And to the point where, I mean, serious self-harm, which I won't go into detail, yeah. But let's just put it this way. I don't know how he did what he did, yeah. But it was all because he was looking to take his fiance to Disney World and went to the website www.mickeymouse.com, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which at the time was not mickeymouse.com. It was one of those adult websites.
Oh.
And he did everything to try and kill himself as punishment for being a dark and an evil being.
Oh, yeah, it must be extremely confusing to have the brain offering confused messages and simultaneously being so open that one's hearing voices from many directions. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, are there, I mean, there's so many animal workers, per se, you know, like dogs that do service, you know, for the blind, people who have seizures and that. I'm surprised that they haven't come up with an animal, you know, animals that can do that, because, I mean, there's animals that can tell when earthquakes and, you know, people are going to have seizures and other life-threatening. And I'm just curious if there's if there'd be any way of having an animal do that kind of service work.
To help someone know when they're moving more into their schizophrenia perceptions? Or,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure animals are very astute about that. And, of course, holistic medicine has found more and more that there are cures for schizophrenia. Of course, when someone starts being given numerous medications and then their liver's compromised, their kidney's compromised, and nowadays there's wonderful medications, I'm saying that sarcastically, to basically make someone insane for life. So it's quite awful. It makes it a lot harder. But, you know, there's holistic approaches for cleansing out whatever has gone into different organs and the brain that's making everything so confused and rewiring the channels. And yes, I'm sure there's that animals know when someone's going through that, and probably people who are experiencing that, who have animal friends who love them, are being often comforted by the animals. And how to involve the animals more in a way of direct healing, or like you're suggesting, is something to think about. And I don't know, maybe it's being done somewhere, and I just haven't heard about that.
Yeah, because what, for animals that are in service, is there a different message that you get from them, like for the seeing eye dogs and the dogs that, you know, pick up things for people who can't bend over, or is there a different type of message that you get from these animals?
I haven't met an animal that's not in service. They're all in service to creation. They really are. Their hearts are in service to creation. And so one service might be to be compassionate. One service might be to be playful. One service might be to be a seeing eye dog. And so they're all in service. And any animal I've ever spoken to has a profound, and I've spoken to hundreds, compassion for the people around him or her. And I have yet to meet an animal who doesn't have a profound acceptance and natural compassion of the heart for the people in that animal's life.
Okay. I just thought I would ask that question, because that's an area that we haven't talked about with, you know, when we talked about animals. And, I mean, it's a pretty big part, because when you watch what these animals do, they are just unbelievable with their gift.
Yeah, and so they, in the same way a dog will make the bone the focus, I will go down the hill and I will not budge my eyes until I have that bone, animals will make their point of devotion their service. And dogs are, you know, incredible with service in that way. They're so loyal to their service. So in answer to your question, a dog who's in service to people as a seeing eye dog takes the job very seriously and puts all focus and love into it.
Yeah, I was wondering, that just kind of crossed over, that, you know, just to ask what if there was any message that was different or any calling. But I guess it's all being of service. It's true.
It's like talking to anyone. Everyone's perception is unique. Any individual person or animal that I speak with has a unique perception. But what I find in common with anyone who has experienced a life that is fulfilling is there's the heart somehow surrendered to a devotional way. It's not devotion how we classify it necessarily. It doesn't have to be a job that we perceive as devotional. Like I said, someone's devotion might be to write their songs, but there's some kind of a devotional surrender of giving to one's natural destiny. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. What one's soul emanates is one's natural destiny, and the animals just understand that. They take it for granted. They're not searching to remember that. So if we speak to someone who's a canine who has a job in a hospital or has a job as a seeing eye dog, they will speak from a place of being very concerned, committed, devoted to the person they're assisting. Some dogs sometimes people try to put dogs in those roles, and that wasn't what the divine intended for them. Like a friend of mine who passed a long time ago named Davis, who was my grandpa's dog, had somehow Davis had been in a school and was being raised to be a seeing eye dog, but Davis failed. But see, my experience was Davis didn't fail. Davis made it very clear that that is not what the universe told him he was born for. And so then he ended up with my grandpa. My grandpa wasn't blind at all. He was traveling the world to the literally till the day he died. But he, but Davis just was meant to. His job was about friendship and kindness and sharing. His job wasn't about being seeing an eye dog. Yet he was in complete devotion and service to what his what the universe told him his job was. Animals know what their job is. Sometimes as people, we forgot, and then we're feeling sad if we don't know what it is because we're looking for it.
That actually, that I think is the number one search that everyone is doing more than anything else. And every other search they're doing, looking for love, looking for this, looking for that, is trying to find their purpose.
Yeah, they're looking for the soul. They're looking for what they are, which is right there inside them. They just overlooked it. We've all overlooked it many times.
If you think about it, it's ironic. We laugh at it, but it's a search that some people never ever reach the end on that search. They never figure it out.
Yes, I mean, we're blessed if many times a day we're not in searching. So, or most of the day we're not in searching. Or none of the day we're not in searching, but some people are struggling to remember who they are. There is an endless seeking, and that can occur. That is true, that can occur. Some people believe it can only occur for so many lifetimes. Some people don't believe we have more than one lifetime. My experience, having talked to many people and animals on the other side, is we have plenty of lifetimes, so...
Yeah.
There's time.
Yeah, we have time, just not in this experience.
Yeah. We are limited by our perception of time. And I'm not advocating that anybody say, oh, well, I'll do it next lifetime. I mean, I invite everyone to take every breath as extremely precious. You don't know how many you have. And even if you have an abundant and you're going to live till you're 90, each one really affects the next one. So I really invite people to use each breath for gratitude and for coming back to full merging into whatever you are experiencing, your emotional and physical sensations fully, because that takes you back into this place in your heart that's so full and just coming from, emanating from a universal place moving through you. And that is only fulfillment and a generating out love towards others. It's an invitation. It's not a theoretical, let's have a peak experience and then we're enlightened. It's let's merge back into the opportunity of awakening through the choice we get to make each moment now, again and again and again. When we forget, let's just say thank you that we had the opportunity to incarnate and forget. Oh, whoops. Okay, sorry. Now let's move back in to presence, to fully embracing what's here now, or offer gratitude.
I like that. Oops. Oops is a great word. It's true, though, right? It's like, oops, okay, I made a different choice there. Let's change my thought now. Let's change my decision. Oops, okay, didn't like that. Let's try something else. Oops. It sounds a whole bunch better than the beating up most of us do on ourselves, like, God, what a fool. How could you make that decision? You know, at least now that's kind of a lightness, a playfulness about it. Oops, okay, I dropped the egg.
I remember one time I had really been loving teaching these seminars. Like, I felt so given to it. My heart felt so completely given to the beings, the people and animals that would come. And then I got in a different state where I got upset about things, and then I got angry at myself that I had gotten in a different state. And I talked to my mentor, Gangaji, and I mentioned it to her, and she said, well, animals make mistakes, don't you? Haven't you noticed, like, an animal's walking up the hill and they realize they went the wrong direction or they dropped something, and then they just continue. You know, they make a mistake and they go on. And she said, well, she said, you start over. You're a beginner. As of this moment, you're a beginner. And it impacted me in such a sweet way, because after that, since that conversation we had, I really decided in every moment I'm a beginner. And if I'm a beginner, I just don't know what's happening, and I can just start fresh. And if I make a mistake, like you said, it's just like, okay, oops, sorry, I made a mistake, and I love everyone, and I love myself, and I love God, and now what? You know, it's really simple. That thing that the mind does, it's just kind of, I don't know where we got that thing in our human consciousness. Oh, I'm terrible, and how could I have done it? Like, well, I don't know, you just did it, so...
Well, the thing is, we learn by experience and by mistake. I mean, just watch babies, you know, when they fall on their bum when they're trying to stand, or, you know, when they're first trying to crawl and they just can't get all the pieces moving in the same direction. It's, we learn by trial and error.
Yeah, another friend of mine, another mentor, Sheikh Ahmed, is always talking about error, how valuable it is and how it's to be expected and welcomed. And when it happens, we just say we're sorry, and then we go another way. Yes, how true. We learn by error all the time. Error is a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, to me, it's a course correction. It's no different than, you know, a plane doesn't go in a straight line. It goes off course, then they recorrect, and then it goes off course, and they correct. And that's how boats are the same, you know, with the currents and the tides and the wind. That, you know, they go slightly off course, then they correct, and it... Why can't we just allow that to be instead of making that a wrongness in ourselves?
Well, I'm noticing as you're speaking and I'm speaking that when we are identified with our identity, when we think the being that is involved in physical and mental and emotional participation is who we are, then our mind can get very upset about how we participate if we perceive it's wrong or we make a genuine error. But as we're really melted back into this love that is holding everything, and then something even deeper than this love, this oneness, this source, there's just a peacefulness. And does Finnegan want to speak on this topic?
He's standing up, that's for sure.
Apparently. Okay, everyone's going to hear a pause of quiet so I can check in with Finnegan on what Finnegan wants to offer.
Okay, I've got his paw.
Yeah, Finnegan's very passionate about this topic and just wants people to be in joy and excitement that it's fun. Finnegan's like, this is fun. Making an error is fun. If we're not in identifying ourselves as our emotional, mental, physical machinery, and we're embedded in the source inside our heart through which this is all created, I can just feel it right now. It's just life is just wave upon wave upon wave. And if my genealogical, ancestral, and personal karmas cause me to do something for which I must then say I'm sorry, you know, that's playful. Finnegan finds it to be like playing with a ball. Finnegan's inviting everyone to make this playful. It's an option. We don't have to. We can be very serious and find ourselves to be very important and beat ourselves up. That is fine. But it might be more fun and happy to be playful.
Well, he's right across my lap now trying to play. But it's true, yeah, he just suddenly got up and he was like...
We can learn, yeah, these beautiful creatures that come in these furry forms have so much to teach us. I find them to be, you know, most of them to just be so far advanced. They understand the simplicity of this world and how this world is such a dream in which to merge back into the source of the dream and play with what we're creating in the dream and say I'm sorry for our oopses and recreate and direct. It's lovely, lovely, simple, playful.
I think it's also, it's learning to stop the shoulds.
Yeah.
I think the shoulds do more to cause us grief and mental trauma and emotional trauma than anything else. It's the fact of always, we should be doing this, or society says it should be this way, or my mother said it should be that way, or I should be a better person, or I think that does more harm to us than anything else. And I think if they drop that word from the human vocabulary, we'd be a whole bunch better off.
Well, I've found in a lot of religious systems, educational systems, and philosophical systems, all of which have incredible value and assist and help many people, but I myself did not ever join with one as a foundational existence. I joined more with the Divine Mother because I kept hearing wherever I went what I should be feeling and thinking, and it really had little to do with what was being thought or felt by the human being. And I found myself born into a body of a human being. So I found it funny when I wasn't finding it frustrating. Yeah, I mean, it's a nice, false, temporary, secure feeling that how we should be and what's supposed to happen and what, we're predicting is going to happen. But then there's reality. And how do we actually become beings of love and peace and light, not theoretically, but in reality? And the only way I know that to be an experience of that's fleeting but can be offered again and again is to face whatever really is happening in reality, whether it's prejudice or compassion, whether it's generosity and kindness or hatred. And if we cannot run from that and not fight it and not analyze it and not fix it and just be fully conscious, open, merge into the sensation of these creations that came before us and will go on after us, we find more and more that underneath them all is a peace that never goes anywhere. It just is. And the animals know this, and they're the greatest teachers of this.
That sounds so wonderful. It's River of Light in the chat room said, like the old black and white mad scientist movies, surprised by their creations. It's true, the old black with the strange where they go to the extreme.
Yeah, where we create ourselves as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? It's part of everything. We are everything. We have in us great capacity for such kindness and such meanness, all of us. And we tend to act out on it less if we can sit with it and fully face it and not run it or judge from it, but we find out what it's created of is completely different than what we fear when we sit in it so fully.
Yeah, she said, yes, I remember. Remember Vincent Price? Yeah, a fellow Canadian, yes. With the weird expressions on his face, when he had it. But it's true. You look at the people that when you go to, like if you're at work or you go into an environment with a lot of people, you look around and you see all the different facial expressions happening. And you go into a shopping mall and it's unless you're working or whatever, but it's supposed to be like a relaxation to a degree. And you go and you see like all different levels of stress and trauma on their faces.
Yeah, everybody's dreaming up their own movie constantly. You can have 100 people in a room and they'll all tell you something. I mean, I learned it completely when I was leading all those seminars all those years. I talked to people in between seminars on staff. Wow, that's interesting. 50 people were in a room and I'm talking to 8 staff people and I'm wondering, were any of you in the same room? And I'll tell you, when couples come into therapy, if they didn't come in together, I'd never know it was the same couple. I hear such vastly different stories. It's not because anyone's lying. Everyone's having a very different dream. It happens in families. Ask 3 adults about the family they grew up in, and you'd never know they're talking about the same family. It happens a lot. And that's the beauty of the different personalities that are given. We're really, the second you're born, you're in a body and it's orchestrated up with a particular personality that's going to affect your perceptions your whole life. And what you think is happening is both your gift to everyone else and your curse. It's where your limitations come in. And that's your curse then becomes your gift, your doorway to awakening when you start to notice all the ways of conditioning and assumption and what's deeper than that.
I like how you said that. That just sums up that just sums up life. That just summed up life when you really think about it. It did. I mean, it completely summed up the whole human experience of, you know, of. Wow. That was so concise, but it's true. I'm
done.
You have
no more to say after that. Everything's finished. Hey, it's really fun to be on your show. I just love it. I never know what we're going to talk about, and it all comes pouring out. I'm in such joy being on your show and interacting with you. Thank you so much. I wonder if anyone has any questions.
Oh, they're still... River of Light agree with me on what I just said there. But it's true. You just, you know, we go through all this, and then someone says something that makes it so simple to see the whole big picture. It's like River of Light says, walk down a hallway with blinders on for a length of time, then they come off, and it's like you can't see. It's too expanded. And it's funny because another conversation that we had today, and you're talking perception, is that at the turn of the century, colors like magenta and electric blue, our brains and our eyes couldn't see those colors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you say more about that? I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Scientifically, I mean, those. If you look back at old pictures and like paintings and that, those colors never existed. The flowers have always been those colors, but we did not have the ability to see it because they're higher vibrations, higher spectrum. And our eyes back in, you know, in the late 1800s and before did not have the ability and capability of visualizing those colors or imagining those colors or whatever happens in the brain that allows you to see. We would see a different, like I say, a muddy red as opposed to a hot pink.
How did they discover this?
It was there's all kinds of stuff on the web and with
I know that people have reported to me that they've seen in these, a lot of times in the seminars people go into these altered states, and people have reported to me, I haven't experienced this myself, but people have reported that they see colors that they never saw before, like new kinds of colors, and I was really fascinated by that.
Yeah,
and so I can see how evolution is how as evolution changes, ability to perceive different kinds of vibration and the colors and sounds that would go with that could be happening. That would make sense.
Yeah, and the other thing is what they're finding is that with all the noise pollution that we have as society now, that our hearing acuity is dramatically reduced from what it was at the turn of the century.
Well, that makes sense. I did notice when I go to places that are very quiet in the forest, far away from people, that I can start to hear the sounds of the trees singing again. And if it's late at night and there's most people are asleep, or it's like on Molokai Island where there's not very many people, I can hear the sound. I call it the sound of the beginning. I hear the angelic choir singing, and then I hear the sound of the beginning. I feel it's like the light created the sound, and then something began. And so I can really appreciate that. That would make sense, that with all the noise going on, it's harder and harder unless we go so deep inside or we go into the natural places to re-access the hearing, not only the outer hearing of each other and the trees singing, but the inner hearing of the angelic choir and the sound out of which all began. If that makes total sense.
That does make sense, yeah.
Oh, I have a book I've been working on. It's of short stories, and it's a novella, and then a collection. And in the novella, it's a story of when the light created the sound so that the light could have a partner, and they fell in love. And then all the funny, crazy things they went through together through the centuries, where they forgot how to love each other, and they forgot that they were the same one until they finally reunited. Except this story is not all like fairy tale in the end. When they reunite, they more realize that they've been united the whole time, and then meanwhile another character kind of branches off into their own ununited reality, which seems to just be how eternity keeps going. In other words, what I'm saying is we are in union 100% of the time, and yet the play is made up of separation through our mind and our enactments and our actions seem to keep going. I don't see evidence that this will be stopping. And so rather than trying to stop anything other than our moving outside of ourselves, I invite everyone into themselves, into their full heart, into their soul, where all is really the same one. This is not a concept. You can feel into that. There's a beautiful quietness in there, and everything is being imagined from it, including what you call yourself, myself.
The imaginings, yes. Yeah.
They're beautiful. There's all kinds. They're ending. Creations.
It's true.
But, you know, I think we all have a sense when we're harmonizing with a creation that has something really nurturing in it, like in Dr. Emoto's work where he photographed the water when it spanked. And the crystals of beauty are universally perceived. When you see the pictures of water that's hated and the pictures of water that's loved, there's an agreement, wow, this is love and this is just sadness. And I think we know. I think we intuitively, our instincts tell us when we're starting to vibrate more with the cycles of the sun and the moon and the flowers and the trees and the animals, or when we're vibrating more with the mind's endless separate creation, which really ultimately is kind of funny, and it's not bad or wrong, just very lacking.
Very lacking. It's funny how we limit ourselves. So, you know, we're such expansive beings, and it's amazing to the amount of effort and energy we expend in a moment-to-moment basis, shackling ourselves.
That is one way that we can spend our energy, yes. We can spend our energy coming home to what's happening, what is here now, in gratitude, and find out what it is, what's just here. I mean, if I just check in with what's here now, all I'm finding love, I'm finding a little worry. When I move into the a little worry, are people understanding what I'm saying? When I move into the worry, I'm finding more love. When I move into the love, I'm just finding everything is light. I'm just finding something's fully expansive, and out of it, myself among many others have been dreamt up. I'm so happy to be part of this dream.
The dream, yeah, dreaming the reality and the dream time, because that's actually what in the native tradition what the women used to do when they used to go at menses time. They used to go into the moon lodge to dream for the tribe for the coming months.
Yeah, you know. That healer Bratzo I've been tuning into, I was articulating on a tape the other day to explain what am I doing when I tune into him to assist people with their transformations. And what I'm doing is I'm tuning into that he's made himself a vehicle, or the unit, or something, the divine made him a vehicle, that he holds a space of all is well. And if all is well, shifts can happen very quickly that we think have to happen over years. And so if we tune into that reality that he's allowed himself to be a vehicle for, that all is well, be in grace, beyond our own constructions, a lot of quick maneuvering can happen through us. But it can't come from an attached state, like this cat has to be found or this person has to heal. It's more like dreaming up a possibility in the container of whether or not that possibility happens, all is well.
Well, what you were saying there with the energy that he has, that's very much, if you read in the Bible, that's basically was the Christ consciousness, was basically the ability to see complete and total wellness for the person before, allowed complete healing of rewriting the energy.
I noticed when Bratzo's working that he just makes himself a complete vehicle, and a ton of angels and masters and guides work through him to contact different people, and he's just allowing a reality that the one you're speaking of to come through, that others may remember it and be touched and reorchestrated. It's very beautiful how he does that in silence. We're very lucky to have all these profound teachers on the planet. I mentioned three today: Gangaji, my mentor, Sheikh Ahmed, another mentor of mine, and Bratzo, a healer who I tune into to assist myself with all kinds of healings for others and myself. and there's so many more on the planet. And the animals, my cat Jesse, just enjoy, and so many animals have been the most incredible masters and vehicles for the light that's pouring through, for the teachings, the Christ consciousness teachings of which you speak, that pure love, all is good, and being able to see that in one another. We have so many people to thank, and we can look at everyone around us as a teacher in some way as we bring in the evolution of 2012. It's not something to wait for. It's not like, where is it? Did it begin? Did it end? It's a cycle of birth that we're all in, that we make ourselves open to. It's happening here and now. It's been happening before it came, 2012, but it really revved up the night before. In my experience, it revved up big time for those who wish to tune in. There's complete support now. There's so much support for the awakening, the benevolence, the evolution. And so when my haircutter said, what are you talking about? The world's going into utter chaos and people are killing each other. Oh, that's been happening forever, you know? That's how some people are participating. I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. Now we can get mad, and then someone can get mad at us for being mad, and someone can get mad because I said that. Like, okay. You know, that's one way to participate. And would you like to go into the love instead by being in gratitude and noticing whatever is here? And if that's what's here, hatred, if you step fully into it, you will find something vastly different underneath it, sourcing it. So I invite everyone to practice with what we've been speaking about when we complete this show, gratitude and stepping so fully into the sensation of whatever is existing now, that you find something different. I guide people through this on a YouTube. I'd like to invite people, if they're still saying, well, this is all abstract, to go receive the YouTube. It's a lively dialogue interview where Bentinho Mazzaro and I are talking, and it's up on my channel, my YouTube, Dr. Lori Moore Satsang channel. It's either Dr. Lori Moore Satsang or Satsangs. It's just slipping my mind, but there's a recent interview, a lively dialogue, where I'm speaking with Bentinho Mazzaro, and at the end of tape two, both he and I, each in a very different way, guide people right into this awareness. Mine is more somatic, through the heart. His is more through consciousness, through awareness, through another way, and either way will get you there, so that this isn't just an hour of abstraction, but it's a real invitation for you to come back into this fullness that is sourcing all of us, this open, vast light that's full of love. Thank you so much. I love being on your show. I can't wait till the next one. And can I send you a link so people can find that YouTube or something?
Yes, please. And I was going to say,
if
you wanted to mention about the upcoming, the free animal communication class you have on the 15th of February.
Yes, February 15th, if you go to globalteleclass.com, you can sign up for free teleclasses on all kinds of things with all types of wonderful teachers. And if you scroll down to February 15th at globalteleclass.com under the free teleclasses under personal development, you'll see up there that I'm offering an animal communication free teleclass. It's called Animal Communication, You Can Thrive. And I'm so grateful that I'll be joined by two of my colleagues, the founder of Animal Spirit Network and also Kristen Thompson, that day. And you can find out more about them, too, online. Animal Spirit Network and also Kristen Thompson, Animal Communicator. The three of us will teach that class together. So go to globalteleclass.com. And look at the free classes in the personal development section. You will find that class and other classes to take. And
I'll be putting the link up on the actual, on your various episode pages.
Wonderful.
The past ones and current, I'll be putting on that link so people can find it, and also on my show page.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I say it's at www.animiracles.com to reach Dr. Lori Moore. And you're back again on the 25th.
Yay. I'm looking forward to that.
And then in March, every twice a month, starting in March.
Yay. Wonderful.
It's going to be great. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, blessings to you and Finnegan.
Thank you. Blessings to you and Jesse as well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Dr. Lori Moore from Anna Miracles. So thank you all for joining me. Now, on Saturday night, I have Angela Gower Johnson on again. This is episode 2 of 3 on our mini-series that we're doing together. There's 4 episodes. It's every Saturday in the month of January. And the series is called Choosing for You in 2012. Now, the episode we had last Saturday was on expanding your business dream. It was a phenomenal show. This Saturday's show is expanding your awakening, tapping into your intuition. The class on the 21st, or the show on the 21st, is Beautiful Body, Working with Your Body. And on the 28th, we have Being Your Greatness. Now, Angela is a Access Consciousness facilitator. And so this is in the Access Consciousness domain. There's some great clearings that are done and some powerful information that comes out. So I hope that you can join me this Saturday night. And, of course, I have Harrison Klein doing a 3-episode mini-series with me. He'll be on Monday. And that the 3 episodes are on Life Change Made Easy. And an introduction to this was done back in November when he did an episode to kind of set it all off, which was How to Change Your Life in 60 Minutes. And it was a phenomenal class that we had with that. So it's worth listening to in the archives. But for now, I'm going to say thank you all for joining me. We see you all on Saturday night, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. GMT. Thank you all for joining Dr. Lori Moore and myself. I'm going to close the show with Jesse Jordan's Boys. Good night.
Wish I could tell my younger self all the things that I now know so well. I would sit her down and begin to spell out all life's mysteries. I would say that high school is just a stage. All the pain you feel is just a phase. It'll pass as you become of age and you grow up to be me. And this one last thing, I'll make sure she knows that the boy back thinks to love her so deep. And she's better off not giving any belief. Good boys are troubles. Boys don't really love you. They just wanna play with your heart like it's a toy. Boys are troubles. And the boys are pretending love you. So go. I could tell all the girls.